When we get to the hospital, my heart rate's at 230 beats a minute.
Wow.
Which is not safe. Suddenly the nurses rush in and they go, look, this isn't working. We need to try something else. So what we're going to do is we're going to put you out and we're going to defibrillate your heart to stop it. And then we're going to defibrillate again to start it again. We're effectively going to reset your heart because if we don't, we're worrying you're going to cardiac.
Welcome to Talking Out with Marla P. Today's guest is Jack Glennon. Jack is a professional coach with over 20 years of leadership experience across industries and continents. Jack is going to share his powerful journey of overcoming personal and professional setbacks, including surviving three strokes, complications of heart surgery, and navigating the family culture dangers in the corporate world ending in redundancy. Thank you for joining me on today, Jack.
Thank you, Marla. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Before we go any further, do you mind sharing your story with my audience?
Absolutely. I'll do a bit of a cut down version because that bio is long enough in itself. The organization I worked for was fantastic. And I learned so much from so many people there. And when I talk about the dangers of the family culture in corporations and organizations, it's not to make people cynical or to go, don't go work for corporate, because there's great jobs out there. There's great companies out there. It's more to make people aware of the potential dangers so they're more corporately mature, more savvy, so they know what they're going into.
Right.
So how I learned this is through the journey of my time there and specifically around an incident with my health that happened. It kicked off back in 2019 where I was away with work on a bit of a conference. And in the evening, there was an incident where we were at dinner and I didn't feel quite right. And I ended up being rushed to hospital. And if anyone's been to A&E or ER, and you know when you get there and they go, oh, what's your name? What's your details? Sit down. We'll see you in a while. That did not happen. I've lost the left side of my body feeling at this stage, which started when I was at the restaurant. I'm feeling fine. I'm talking coherently as I am now. But I'm leaning, going, hi, how you going? And they immediately opened the door, rushed me in. A colleague came with me, and to be fair, to this day, I count him as he is as close to me as family. He stayed with me until about 3 o'clock in the morning that night, and he saw me at my lowest, and I've seen him at his lowest. And I would, if he needed me, I would go and see and be there for him in a heartbeat. He's very special. But they wheel me in, and I'm getting shirt ripped open, things put on me, wires, all sorts as they do. And I hear that someone mentioned the word stroke. Now, this is in my early 30s, and I'm someone who's been very active. Before this, I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa, scuba diving instructor. I've lived a very active lifestyle. So, and in your early 30s, you kind of think you're made of magic and rubber. So to hear stroke, fear, absolutely the purest form of fear and confusion one can imagine.
For sure.
The night continued and the symptoms and signs went away. As bad as it got to here where I lost the feeling of my tongue. I was talking like this. I ended up being discharged, and because they couldn't quite work out 100% what happened. They think it could have been that, but they wanted to get me to get more tests. Getting home, the next couple of months were more tests. And I was eventually told, look, you're young, you're fit, you're healthy. We can't quite work this out. Your body just had a hiccup. Carry on.
Oh, my.
Interesting. But you trust it, right? You trust the process. You go, okay. And also in your early 30s, there's an element of denial. And so what I did is I threw myself into work even more. 4 weeks after I got the result, got the sort of, you're okay, carry on, I determined that I would complete a Tough Mudder course, which is like this huge obstacle course, you know, very tough, ironically. But it was my way of coping, going, my body's fine. I'm going to go and stretch it and push it to prove that my body's not smart at all. But it's how you, especially in your early 30s, especially guys, I think more so go, right, we're fine. We're tough, going to be problem solving. So the smartest. Now, I was on aspirin for 6 months, which is a blood thinners element to it. So that was as a precaution. Okay. And that, then we go to January 2020. So we're going from March 2019 to January 2020. And I'm on a trip with a friend of mine in India, and he and I are driving a tuk-tuk in a race the length of India, which was an amazing experience.
Oh, wow.
But But in the middle of nowhere, we're buying fuel and oil. And I'm walking away and I suddenly feel the same sensation and I get the taste. Marla, there's a taste that when it happens, I can't really explain it. It's like a metallic-y taste that comes in your mouth.
Oh, wow.
And I'm slowly going down, feeling, you know, again, losing the feeling, losing strength, everything. No fear this time. I'm blue murder angry. I'm absolutely apocalyptic. My poor friend is going pale, going, what's going on? He knew the history, thankfully. Anyway, we get back to where we were staying. I knew I needed to take aspirin. I need to get my heart rate going. Because we're in the middle of nowhere, there wasn't an option to go to a hospital. So you kind of have to handle it. Now, normally people would go, okay, well, I need to get to the closest doctor and da-da-da-da-da. I wasn't going to do that because I'm stubborn. I was going to finish the race. So once I could walk, we finished the tuk-tuk race, fully knowing something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
When I got home, a lot of people think this is a bit weird, but I didn't tell my wife and I didn't tell my mum, who's back in the UK, what happened, because I knew something wasn't right and I knew they'd have lots of questions for me. I didn't tell work. I didn't tell my leader either. I'd needed to find out what was going on in my mind. So I went to my doctor, got further tests. And we found out, because I had a different neurologist who was amazing. God, she was phenomenal. That I had, in fact, had 3 strokes. She showed me the scans. And on the right-hand side of my brain were 3. They almost looked like stars, like bright stars, which where bleeds had occurred.
Oh, my goodness.
When the 3rd one was, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
So at least this gave me, and whilst that wasn't great news, it was in some ways a relief because I was like, okay, now we know what it is.
Right.
Now we know what's caused it. So this is a stepping stone. So then I started to share with my leader and my wife and my mum. And then more tests continued going, what's caused them? Because again, relatively young, relatively fit, healthy, da da da. What we found out was that it was to do with my heart. When we're born, we have a partition in our heart. When we're born, that partition has a flap that's open. And when we take our first breath, it goes shh and seals.
Okay.
For 30 odd years, mine had been doing that.
Oh my goodness.
Never got picked up at birth. So that had been picking up bits and pieces in your blood and then eventually causing strokes.
Oh, wow.
So at this point, obviously, then I'm going to solve the problem. So what was needed was heart surgery. Amazing device. They created this. They have this fan-like device that they put it through your body and basically goes through one end, out the other, and sort of seals like that. So it's very, very smart, very clever. But if the timelines haven't connected just yet, we're now in March 2020. And in March 2020, COVID was kicking off.
Right.
So any tests were far more complicated because you had to get millions of different tests at the same time. No one was allowed to come with me because no one's allowed in the hospital except for me.
Mm-hmm.
And more complications would ensue. So I had to go to the heart surgery. And the day after my heart surgery, I'm in hospital, I'm all wired up. Now, most people at this point would be watching Netflix, playing a game, reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Microsoft Teams working.
What?
Yeah. So this is one of two elements of the family culture and corporations that can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. Firstly, you give more than you feel you probably should.
Right.
Definitely give more than you can pay. Because as a family, because this is what we do, we give more.
That's right.
The other element is the dangers which will come later. But that was what was going on right now. It's my safe space. You know, I was going through something not quite fun, not great, but work is something I knew I could control and I could get through. Into. I was talking to my leader and one of the execs at the time. My leader did the best he could, but the exec that I was talking to online was going, you know, you really shouldn't probably be working. I sent them the photo that I still have of me all wired up going, yeah, great. And they were like, wow, you don't look great. You know, you probably shouldn't be working. Now, I reflect now on this in hindsight. Not only would they give me the right advice, which is fair, what they should have done is taken this one step further and gone, this employee is not listening. They're not behaving right.
Mm-hmm.
Disconnect them from the system and force them to stop working. But they didn't.
That's
they was like, just do what you can. It's okay. You know, we're here for you if you need you. So it was, they enabled it. They didn't, they did what they could, but they didn't really stop.
Right.
Again, look, we all make mistakes, and along my journey, I've made mistakes. Others have, you know, I'm never one to call people out because it's part of life's journey is making mistakes and learning from them. But after that, I'm getting home and I'm resting up, and pretty sure just under a week goes by. It was a Tuesday. My wife's away giving plasma, ironically. My heart, just out of the blue, goes crazy, goes really fast and really arrhythmic all over the place.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm panting, I'm sweating, I end up throwing up, I feel dizzy. Again, not the smartest move because I should have just called the ambulance. I call my neighbor to check whether I should call the ambulance. I need to look at me. How do I look? He was convinced that I didn't look good, so the ambulance was called. So the ambulance turns up, equally looking very concerned. They get me into the ambulance and then we don't move. And we're sitting on my driveway and I'm panting away, kind of going, what's going on? And they explained to me that they're waiting for another ambulance because if it goes where they worried it might go, they're going to have to work on me while someone else is driving.
Oh my.
So it was another reaffirmation that, okay, I'm in trouble. When we get to the hospital, my heart rate's at 230 beats a minute.
Wow.
Which is not safe. It's a great way to lose weight.
Sweating.
Exactly. But yeah. They put me in and they give me a drip, magnesium and potassium. And I can't remember which one, but one of them was like someone squeezing my arm. It was bloody sore. Doesn't work. Now, my wife gets home, bless her, and the neighbors come out going, Jack's gone to hospital. She rushes. She can't come in. It's COVID. It's not allowed. Mm-hmm. So I'm in this cubicle room on my own. And I give my mum a call back in the UK because she was aware of the surgery and everything leading up. It's the only person I could really talk to at that point. And I'm giving her this information. She's hearing everything going on in the background. And then suddenly the nurses rush in and they go, look, this isn't working. We need to try something else. So what we're going to do is we're going to put you out and we're going to defibrillate your heart to stop it. And then we're going to defibrillate again to start it again. We're effectively going to reset your heart because if we don't, we're worrying you're going to cardiac.
Oh my goodness.
I'm on my phone to my mum and she's obviously hearing all this, which was been unbelievably difficult for her. And I effectively had to say goodbye to her at that point because I don't know if I'm coming back or not.
Right. Now, a
few people go, you know, did you feel fear? Were you at peace with it? Terrified when I was talking to mum. The moment I put the phone down, it's a very, very weird feeling. Suddenly I was like, I'm fine. I'm ready. And it wasn't at peace with giving up or peace of dying or anything like that. It was, I use this metaphor that it was, I got the sense that it was the one card I had to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm playing a game of cards and the dealer's giving me one card and it's face down. And that's the one card. And either I flip it and I take the chance and I might wake up or I don't and I give up and done. So in my mentality, I'm ready. All right, let's do it. I remember saying, I think I was verbally saying it actually at the time, I'm going to wake up.
That's right.
Thankfully, I did. This repeated a few times. It got less severe, but that was Tuesday. The following Sunday, it happened again. I was 190 beats a minute. Mm-hmm. So I went in, potassium, magnesium. This time it was different. Weirdly sensation. They went, okay, we're going to have defibrillate. I was like, all right, bring it on. I'm ready. Done this before. then I went in again and it was almost like going to your local bar. It was, hi ladies, I'm back again. How is everyone doing? Oh, welcome. Good to see you. The third time, they couldn't defib me because it was the Wednesday after they had already done it on the Sunday. For sure. And they said the risk was too high.
Right.
So following that, got better and better over the course of time. And I was on the medication and it was about managing that meds for about 6 months time, 6 months period. Basically the heart became inflamed. It was really angry and it was therefore the erratic heart rate and everything ensued. Now, again, through this period, I did what I did before, which is throw myself into work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, literally the day of one of these attacks, I think it was the Wednesday, my leader left the business. And he was my mentor. He was my coach. And I owe so much to him. He didn't leave in a good way. And literally, the moment we jumped off the call, I got a call straight away offering me his job. Now,
really?
Leadership is something I've always done. It's my passion. So it was something that I was always going to jump on, but it was very conflicting at the same time. I ended up calling them back as I was heading to hospital going, I would like to accept the job, please, but I'll call you later.
Oh, my. Oh, wow.
Which,
talking about dedicated.
Yeah. So you're getting a sense of mindset of where I was with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this obviously continued and ties in with what I've learned so much through the journey is the dedication went too far. I became very married to the role and married to the business. And I coach people now and say, love your job, don't love the company. Because the company doesn't love you back. And that's just life. That's just savage. That's fine. It got so much that it literally was part of my identity to a degree that people called me. So say I won't name the company, but say I worked for Nokia. People called me Nokia Jack.
Wow.
Which at the start, when I remember that I had a client who called me in an email and I was like, oh, that's really cool. That's wicked. But when you end up leaving that, you mm-hmm. need to shed that bit of your identity. So what I could climb the ladder, but work more and more. And I was the biggest preacher and coach on work-life balance, but equally renowned at being the worst at doing it. To my own detriment, you know, again, we learn the best through our mistakes. And now what I do is use my own mistakes openly and coach those to prevent them from making the same. Because I can see them before they even happen. So
right.
Then we come on to right beginning of this year. And to a certain degree, I saw this coming along with a couple of other people. Businesses, especially over the last couple of years, financial crisis has happened and there's been challenges. Businesses mm-hmm. have to continue and they have to grow. And to find growth, sometimes they need to do it not in a great way, which is cutting costs.
That's right.
It's people. Now, when I talk to people about what do you think is a family business? People go, oh, mum and pop deli down the road, you know, a cafe in the middle of the city. I love that. You know, we need more places like that. I think that's got so much heart and presence and brilliance. We also do need the corporate world.
That's right.
But the dangers of marrying those are twofold. One I've already mentioned, which is working more than you should and going over and above to your detriment. Mm-hmm. The other is when things like layoffs and redundancies or disciplinaries or disagreements, when things go wrong.
That's right.
This doesn't get spoken about. And I've seen it and I've experienced it. Because what happens on a dime is your safe space, your family flips and becomes somewhere of pain and mm-hmm. somewhere that doesn't want you anymore, doesn't value you anymore. At least you feel it. And it's almost like a breakup.
Right.
It ties in with your identity. I know someone who left the business years ago and still talks to it about this day. And you can see the pain and because they were ousted. They weren't wanted anymore for potentially fair reasons on both sides. But because psychologically we're family, we look after each other first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, because you can't. No corporation can. You can't go, we've got to look after the bottom line and our people all the time, because eventually they're going to clash.
That's right. That's right.
That's if you acknowledge that, that's okay. You can still be a great organization with great culture,
mm-hmm.
but get that because families don't get rid of one another traditionally.
That's true.
That has happened, but traditionally. So what that does in that sense is makes you question your worth, mm-hmm. your identity. What do I do? You know, my life is just this. This is all I am. This is who I am. What do I do after this point?
That's right.
And it can really cause people a lot of psychological damage. You know, people can go into have anxiety, have depression, all sorts.
Mm-hmm.
When it happened, when I ended up leaving the business through redundancy, it was a big shakeup of the business and they wanted to relocate people and all sorts. And I wasn't part of that plan because of not really mainly weren't willing to relocate again because I've already done it once.
Right.
And as tough as it was at the moment, looking back now, it was the best thing that's ever happened to me.
I'm sure.
Because you reflect back and you go, you know, I wouldn't have left on my own record. No chance, because mm-hmm. I was in it's what you do. You go over and above, you continue, you carry on because it will get better. And it probably does. But I can equally reflect and go, the last year I was there, I was pretty miserable most of the time. I wasn't happy. I was stressed. I was suffering from anxiety through the job itself.
Mm-hmm.
Getting out of it, I decided to do a couple of things. One, when people get made redundant and or laid off, if they've been with the business for a long time, and I was there for nine odd years, you're usually given a payoff.
Right.
And the temptation is to buy a nice car or go on a holiday or put it towards the mortgage if you want to be sensible. I decided to take the opportunity, because how often do we have both the time and the money together?
That's true.
I wanted to give myself the time to redefine myself, to reset. So what I did is I put all that lump sum into a high interest account, and I paid myself a wage.
Nice.
So what that effectively did was, for a period of time, I was financially still working for the company.
Right.
Because I still had the same money coming in every month, even there. So it took that pressure off, oh my God, I need a job right now. Because I know within myself, if I'd done that, where I ended up working, they were not going to get a good version of me. In all honesty, you know, I needed to reset and rebuild. What I did do was I went away on my own, and God bless my wife and thank her for supporting me and letting me just go.
Okay. Because
I needed to take myself out of the environment. And I encourage people that I coach now to do that when they're going through some tough times, is to put a routine in at least. If they can't get away for a week or two, literally just on their own, put in a routine daily where they're doing something just for them, but it's outside the environment. You know, if you're working from home, don't stay in the house. Go for a walk for half an hour.
That's right.
It's just that breaking up the moment, and that time is for you.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, going away for a couple of weeks, it allowed me to reset and really redefine myself and reflect. And I remember, because I went on a road trip and I was driving. It was sun was beaming. It was a gorgeous day. And there's music. And like many people, I sing in the car, not very well. And there was a song that was playing. And the lyrics were so relevant to everything that I'd just gone through. And I was reflecting back when I was in hospital and moments of real great memories with special people at the same time that I wasn't going to be working with. But I was reflecting leadership that had potentially let me down over the years, leadership that was brilliant over the years. Mm-hmm. And it all started to come out. And I was smiling from ear to ear at the same time as tears rolling down my face.
Wow.
And I was belting this song out. God knows what I looked like, people driving me off. But it was so, I encourage anyone to try and have this sort of moment. And it's you can't decide to do it. It just happens organically. It happens at the moment. But it was, you're going to be okay. You're going to be you. And you are you without this defined identity that was all those years ago. You're not made of glass, but you're not made of magic and rubber either. So it's about, but now you're on a new journey to define who you are.
Right.
And so that's what I decided to do.
Good for you. What are the things you now prioritize most in your life?
Great question. Prioritization is of two parts. It's my purpose and my passion, doing what I want to do and love, which is coaching. Developing people, you know, that's what you talk about, called gets you up in the morning. Seeing someone have a light bulb moment from coaching them or giving them ideas that's priceless. It's such an amazing experience and something I'm very grateful of. But to see someone's development and winning vicariously through them is huge. So that's from a professional sense, but maintaining my priorities in my life as well. So I put certain things in place where I play tennis 3 times a week. I play soccer once a week. I do date night with my wife. These things aren't negotiable. They're important to me.
That's right.
Well, it's balance. So, you know, I might miss one tennis night, you know, a month here or there, because that's life, happens. But they're important to me. And therefore, whatever career I've got or whatever role I'm doing, they're part of that. And that's not sort of, oh, well, the job's more important because it's, you know, it's this, that, and the other. That's part of my value and who's important to me. And the other part is people. I made a prominent effort say yes when people reached out and said, let's go for a coffee, let's go for a beer, you know, because the good people around you are really special, especially when you go through the toughest times.
That's true. That's true. And the importance of having a good support system makes a difference.
Huge. And not being afraid to ask for help. God, I've asked that's for help right. So yeah. You know, what do you think of this? You know, can I bend your ear? I've got an idea. Yeah, absolutely.
That's true. So how do you celebrate the small moments now compared to before your experience?
I do that for starters. It's what I don't really believe in regrets, but if I could change anything, I wouldn't actually change the journey at all because it's who I am now. But I was appalling at celebrating the moments. I had so many moments in my career at the business that I won various awards, but I didn't spend at all the moment to stop and go, wow, this is amazing. I just went to the next. So by recognizing and by stopping and breathing and cliche, living in the moment, that's the change that I didn't do previously.
So what inspired you to become a professional coach? Was it your experience, your illness?
Experience of people. It was, again, coming out of this, it was reaching out to a friend of mine and asking for help and going, you know, I want to really hone in on what my purpose and my drivers are. So I spent a bit of time with him, and it was so clear that looking through my career, the highlights and every role that I oral had were elements of leadership and coaching. Again, I'm a scuba diving instructor, teaching people, coaching, giving the skills to go on. The best parts of my time in the business were either teaching people in the trade about certain practices or teaching people internally or coaching teams on sales or whatever it might be. It was developing people. One of my proudest moments was seeing someone in my team who I'd onboarded and developed, see them win the number one person of the year within the business, within their category. And it's like,
nice.
My wife and I, we don't have kids, but it was like a proud parent moment. I was, I won an award that night myself, but it was down there compared to seeing him win that award. Seeing him win that award was just phenomenal. So to reflect on all that, going, yeah, that's what you want to do. That's
passion. That's awesome. So how do you promote your business? Do you have a website or?
Yeah, great question.
What are your social media handles?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different elements. There's my own LinkedIn, my LinkedIn page, but also our Instagram and our website. So the company's called Glenn and Peak Coaching. That's quite long, so I've shortened that when I did the website. Glenn and PC. But yeah, we've got an Instagram page and we've got a website along with my own LinkedIn where I write as well. I write for articles for LinkedIn as well. But yeah, promoting through those platforms. I do a blog on the website and also through wonderful opportunities such as this. So thank you for that as well.
Oh, you're welcome. So what can people expect from you next?
Cool. Good question. The business is still relatively in its infancy and I'm exploring different avenues outside that as well with a couple of different companies, but continued growth, you know, it's taking some really exciting turns. You know, I'm meeting so many great people because what I do is offer a free 30-minute session for people just to tell me their problems and go, you know, what have you got going on? They get to meet me because it's all virtual, it's all online. And it allows them to get a feel and go, actually, this isn't for me. It's a bit scary, but thank you. Or what I do is I let them tell me what they want to tell me. And then I go, look, based on the information you give me, I suggest we could do this in 2 or 3 sessions, for example.
Nice.
And I tailor it to them. Because that was the big thing, what I wanted to change was so many, and there's nothing wrong with them, they're going to place, but so many coaching programs, you know, go, we've got a 5-step program to solve your problem. It's not going to solve everyone's problem. Everyone's got different problems. I open up going, okay, you know, if you're new to sales, new to the corporate world, struggling with your career, struggling with identity, whatever it might be, let's sit down and have a chat for half an hour. And then I go, cool, this is what I think we can do. I need to go away and work on it. And then we can start the process. But I go, this is how many sessions we need. So they have an idea of how much it's going to cost. Because coaching gives a direct goal. Mentoring is ongoing and ongoing and ongoing. And whilst I've got a mantra She spoke to someone yesterday who messaged me and went, can I talk to you for half an hour? I'm like, yeah, sure, no drums. That was just on the phone. I'm not going to charge them for that. Because my opinion is clients will do a coaching program, if you like, for how many sessions they need. When they're done, if they need to chat for half an hour, I'm here. That's mentor. Mentoring takes over from coaching after that.
That's true. That's true. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you would like to discuss?
I think we've covered a lot. Have I missed anything?
Oh, my. If you could share one piece of wisdom with my listeners about life, what would it be?
I'll give you two of my favorite quotes.
Okay.
And one bit of advice that I was given. I'll give you three. I'll give you a trifecta.
Okay.
One, which is a bit of a golden oldie from Maya Angelou, which is people will forget what you said, what you did, but never how you made them feel.
That is so true. I love that quote.
Me too. The other is a recent one from Gordon Ramsay, which I absolutely loved, which is never fear the storm, but get comfortable dancing in the rain. And that's all around going for adversity. Because you see people who've never dealt with adversity before and they struggle the moment it first happens. Like, adversity shapes who we are. And it's horrible, it's tough in the moment, but you grow so much through it afterwards. You know, so it's about being comfortable being uncomfortable.
That's right.
And the best advice that I was ever given, and I always share this one, is in your darkest and lowest of moments, lift up your head and have a look at the people that have stood up and the people that are closest to you. They are the truest reflection of who you really are.
And I agree.
Up them.
I agree. Absolutely. 100%. Oh, my goodness. Jack, it's been a pleasure meeting you. Thank you for choosing my platform to share your story. I don't take it for granted. I enjoyed talking to you and getting to know you better.
You too.
If you want to come back in the future, you're more than welcome. Just get in contact with me and we can set something up.
Sounds fantastic.
And thank you again. Before we leave, I want to leave my listeners with my motto. When you see the need, plant the seed.
Love it.
Thank you. Thank you again. And you have a great night.
My pleasure. You too.
Thank you. Bye.